Hey everybody, Dave Hodges here, host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show that's very much trying to free America one enslaved mind at a time. And we are, as you know, decidedly pro-American and decidedly pro-Jesus, but we're not exclusive. In other words, we welcome all people and we will treat you with respect. Welcome to the show. Our one sponsor for the show is Noble Gold. Listen, the banks have some difficulties, and they only got about 1% of the funds on hand to cover all deposits in the FDIC. Why would you risk everything, including your retirement? Because the Dodd-Frank Law 2010 says they can keep your money, they can keep your retirement. You are an unsecured creditor now since that law was passed. Well, Noble Gold has a solution for you. They want to take your retirements, put it under your name, back it with precious metals, not a failing daughter, and they got a whole lot of other things they do. And take it from me, I've been a customer, not just an advertiser, a customer for 9 years. And they're the only ones I use with my precious metals collection. So what do? Go to DaveHodgesGold.com, start the process there, or call them at 877-646-5347, 877-646-5347. Our guest is Brent Hamacek, and he did a lot of writing and input for Charlie Kirk. So obviously this person is very, very talented because Charlie was as good an orator as I have ever seen. And I think the great tragedy in my heart with the loss of Charlie is I think one day he would have been a terrific president. I admired him. I only got to talk to him a couple of times, but one of the sharpest minds I had ever seen, ever heard. And I think he's responsible for turning around the election of 2024 with his input into Turning Point, where he role modeled effectively free speech, acceptance of other people's opinions without volatility and hostility. He was a total model for what I thought we should all stand for. And I still grieve his loss today. And here to talk to us about Charlie and some of the things that have gone on is Brent. Brent, welcome to the show. I appreciate you coming on. Good to have you. And I'm sure you share probably a much, since you were close to Charlie, a much deeper sense of personal loss. I don't think there's anyone to replace Charlie, personally.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure when somebody's slightly crazy enough to have me on the airwaves and talk to them. So I appreciate that. Look, he was singular, right? We don't have anyone in America right now to compare him to. Some would offer perhaps Ben Shapiro. I would not. I don't think they're comparable, but they did share in common the attribute of being young. But other than that, if you try to look around and say, well, now who else is there? There isn't anybody. So, and what he did to start Turning Point USA at the age of 18, this is something that's never been done in American history. Never hasn't been done. We know this, by the way, because when we wrote Time for a Turning Point in 2016, the book, we tried to find somebody else who had done it, and nobody's done it since. So now you have the, if this were marketing, excuse me, if this were marketing, we'd have what we call the category killer in terms of campus activist groups in Turning Point USA, started by an 18-year-old. Just over a decade ago. So that in and of itself means he is unique, still in this moment, and he was unique in American history and likely will remain that way for some time. Took over 200 years to find the first one of him. I suspect the search is on, but it might take a while.
Yeah, I know when Charlie died, my first reaction was, we need to produce 1 million Charlie Kirks and we got to continue this work. But I have to tell you, as supportive as I was of Turning Point prior to, and I need to say this as a disclaimer, after Charlie's death, people started criticizing Erica Kirk, TPUSA. And for about 3 weeks, Brent, I said, I'm not going there. This is not a JFK deal. I'm not going there. I'm really, really concerned about that. But I started to see evidence that flipped my thinking. And I went from being hands off, let's help the organization, to I had real concerns about what I saw. Have you seen a shift in turning point that departed from where Charlie was at?
Well, there's a shift in turning point, but I don't think there's any great conspiracy behind it. But by the way, if you'd like, it'll be fun to talk about the word evidence in a bit. But look, so I wrote Charlie's columns from January 1st of 2014 up through January of 2023. And during that period of time, I don't think, and I haven't gone back and looked at the very end just yet, but I don't think there was a single column that was actually written about religion. I did write some long-form essays for him after that date that were religious in tone. The point is that Charlie started Turning Point USA. To promote the ideas of free markets and first principles. Charlie and I used to have a lot of fun talks about religion. I would characterize him early days as being what I would call a very 280 yards off the tee, middle of the fairway Protestant, right? So nothing abnormal. He wasn't in the fringe. He didn't hit a big shot either. He was just right there. And of course, that evolved over time. I think that part of the influence on Charlie, like it is with all people who get married, part of that influence in changing the nature and really intensity of his faith came from his wife. In the last couple of years of Charlie's life, he more and more wore the religious aspect on his sleeve as opposed to free markets and first principles. Some of that, by the way, doesn't relate to religion. It comes from his move away from somebody who in 2015 and early 2016 could not stand the idea of Donald Trump being president to someone who, reportedly played a role in picking a lot of his cabinet members this time around. So that changes your view of free markets and first principles as well. So,
It does. But
An evolution was taking place anyway, taking place within him, manifesting in his public appearances, his writings, and pronouncements. And so then we lose him. And so what happens? Well, now with Erica running the organization, and if you follow my line of thought, that she played some measurable, significant role in changing his trajectory, it makes sense that she would then also change the trajectory of the organization. I don't think any of that is somehow or other aberrant. I don't think it's good or bad. I think it just is. I do think this, that say over the next 5 years, Turning Point USA will attract a different type of student than it might have attracted 10 years ago.
how will it be different?
I think that the organization will be more likely to attract young people who have, say, that more Christian faith-based fundamentalist thought process and are looking for a home where that is welcome, as opposed to, say, the more libertarian student who's just kind of excited about, the stuff Milton Friedman might have written. So that, again, that's value neutral. That's just a shift. Businesses change their customer base all the time, right? Over time, they evolve and change. And I think that's what's happening with Turning Point. And then everybody can join or not join based on how they feel about that sort of atmosphere and those sorts of emphases and values.
You mentioned that you don't see any conspiracy, but let me tell you how I see this. I started out the same way, and I did a lot of work very early on as an academic on the Kennedy assassination, and I said, I don't want to go here with this. And I was very firm in that. But I got to tell you, I look at the forensics of the deal. I feel Turning Point officials, including Erica, should be asking the same questions I am. Instead, they tell us to basically shut up. In fact, in Erica's exact words, stop. And I'll give you a couple examples. The 30-06. I can't find a sniper. I can't find a professional hunter that thinks that it was possible that Charlie's head would remain intact with a 30-06. There, people should be asking questions. And then you got the disassembling the cameras. And then they lied and said the police told them to do it. And the police said, we didn't tell them to do that. The fact that the first paragraph of the security agreement, as I looked into this, about mechanisms for security was absent from their TPUSA agreement with UVU. I mean, I could go on and on. And I got to tell you one thing that really, really bothered me. Mikey McCoy is steps away from Charlie. And when Charlie goes down, I've looked at this 10 times. He didn't even look at it. He just walked away talking on his phone. And I'm thinking the indifference. And then Erica, that Zoom call, and I'm sure you've seen this, she's just celebrating making money since Charlie's death. No mention of Charlie in the Zoom call that I saw. And it didn't look like a grieving widow to me. And this was 6 days after Charlie died. And then finally, the lawyer who represents TPUSA wrote to a guy named Zach DiGregorio and say, stop talking about the audit that Charlie ordered. He only was having an effort to look at finances. I don't care if you call it effort or audit, Brent. The bottom line is when you're looking at finances, it's an audit. And if we're going to carry on Charlie's legacy and Erica's going to do that, then why didn't she follow through with what Charlie ordered instead of canceling it? So do you want to address some of those things?
Sure, I'll address them quite easily. First of all, let's be clear about something. And this is not arguable. At least I don't think it is. And that is, if there's some great conspiracy here, that means that the Trump administration is involved in it. It does. Period. End of. So Donald Trump somehow either ordered, blessed, or covered up Charlie Kirk's assassination. I'm not buying it. I'm not. I think the idea that you can take some of the data points you raised, the ones about how Erica conducted herself, the one about how Mikey McCoy behaved on screen, and what you can infer, those kinds of inferences about how people. It's like when you watch a Dateline episode and they'll have some investigator say, well, their behavior didn't strike me the way it normally should have when someone was killed. And so they're pointing at that person. Later in the show, by the way, you find out that person didn't do it. So we all like to think that we have this correct stereotype of how people should react. Problem is, people all react in their own individual ways. Now, I'm not for a minute going to sit here and either condemn or condone how Erica's conducted herself since Charlie's assassination. That's between herself and her God of her understanding. I will say that I've had Erica Kirk in my home. Didn't identify her as the murder conspiracy type. Could have read it wrong. But at the end of the day, when people think they are piecing together something, and then they look at all of them and they say, how could it be anything else? This is really simple to me. It means that winning a lottery is impossible. You can't win the lottery, except people do. And what is winning the lottery? It is a coincidence against astronomical odds, incredible odds, none of which are anywhere near as low as the odds of some of these other various things seeming to come together. So, for people who like to construct conspiracy theories, who like to think they're connecting dots, I would only suggest that if you have a lot of dots to connect, there are, in fact, an infinite number of ways to connect them. All I know is if there was a conspiracy involved, the only thing I would know for sure about that conspiracy is that Donald Trump's involved in it. And I'm not buying that. I do not believe that the man who credits Charlie Kirk, you mentioned how Charlie was involved in the 2024 election. The Trump family actually credited Charlie Kirk with getting them elected in 2016. Now, that's a little known fact, but I sat in a room where that was discussed in December of 2016. So here's a young fella ostensibly responsible for Trump winning the presidency twice, giving his all in 2020 to have had him reelected, and then somehow or other Trump's involved or covering up his assassination. I don't buy it, and somebody would
Brent, I
have
got
to
to tell you,
actually prove it.
what you're saying is logical because I said the same thing at one time. But it just I look at some of the surrounding circumstances that bother me, and I still, in my mind right now, have a hard time believing Trump was involved in it. But you also look at the crime scene was paved over in 48 hours. I've never seen that with a homicide ever, ever. This is absolute insanity. And then you have, and let me just get to Eric. I want to dispel this. Never have I said she was involved in the assassination. Okay,
No, but
I don't
others
think there's
have.
any proof
Others
for
have.
that. But
Right.
I want to finish the point though. But her leadership, in my mind, is in question because from the period of 2013 to 2018, she's told multiple public lies that have been disproven about her background. And the thing is, I don't care about her background. She had a right to a life before she met Charlie, and that's fine with me. I don't know why she felt the need to deceive, but I'll tell you the one thing that really sticks with me. If you went to AmFest, and I don't know if you saw this, but there was the mock-up booth of Charlie's assassination in that tent, and people
Right.
paid to get in there and take selfies.
Right.
I can't imagine any grieving widow thinking that's okay. And if she didn't okay that, I hope to God she would have fired the people that did something so disrespectful like that.
Well, look, again, we're back at that. I can't imagine someone doing that part. By the way, not something I would have done. I thought at the time when people asked me about it, I thought it was. I mean, my word was just ghoulish. I thought it was ghoulish. But look, it brings up sort of almost a bigger issue. So again, I'm not going to condemn her for doing it. I wouldn't do it, but last time I checked, I don't run the world or Turning Point. So, and of course, she had to have condoned it. She runs the place. Let's go all Harry Truman on this. The buck stops there, but, here's the problem in that case, and here's the problem with Candace Owens. And that is, and I'll put it to you this way, Adolf Hitler never would have mattered, never would have mattered in history if he hadn't been elected chancellor and convinced a whole bunch of German people take up arms, invade Europe, and exterminate Jews. The problem isn't necessarily in setting up a mock booth to have yourself taken a picture where, the way Charlie was assassinated. The problem is with the people that walked into the booth and had their picture taken. They're the vulgar ones.
I think it's both sides. To me, that's an inexcusable event. I see that as cringeworthy. Those are my values, but I got to tell you, these values I'm saying about that observation with the booth, that's shared. I went to dinner on the second
I
night
agree with it, by
at
the way, in terms
AmFest,
of,
but I
yeah, I
got to
mean, it
tell you,
was.
even people from Turning Point who were at this meeting we had, even they were turned off by this.
I wouldn't be surprised. Like I said, I'm not defending it. It's not what I would have done. But we are just way too forgiving with the regular members of the masses who pick up and follow and engage in these sort of things. You can say, wow, what a terrible thing to put up that booth. Okay, granted. What on earth is going on in the head of a young person who walks in and has their picture taken there? To me, that's a much bigger problem. And the much bigger problem is always not the hater. The bigger problem is always the ones who follow the hater. It only can be effective. These things. So in this case, I'm not suggesting that they created the booth out of hate. And I'm not suggesting that the students went in out of hate. I am suggesting, though, that something that seems quite distasteful to the average person, or likely does, is then being robustly embraced by a whole lot of folks going in to have their picture taken. And I want to focus in on what's wrong with them. So you could not, I'm guessing that you probably didn't go in and have your picture taken. If I were there, I wouldn't have gone in and had my picture taken. What's going on with people that did?
But
That's
I don't
frightening to
think you
me.
can isolate it to the user side. Making the opportunity available is a problem for me. And we can point the finger at the people that went in there, but that doesn't change my feelings. But you know, back to Erica, I'm talking about her suitability to lead Turning Point to have similar results to what Charlie had, albeit it's going to be different because people are different. But I just see things in her character that are emerging that I don't think she's the right choice for Turning Point, and it concerns me where she's going to. And I'm going to bring up the Zionist issue for a second. And I got to say this as a disclaimer. As a young history teacher, I used to have Holocaust survivors come to my history class. I'm German immigrant by my ancestry on my dad's side. We have Jewish people in our family line. Okay, so I am not anti-Semitic. But I have the right to criticize Israel and Netanyahu politically. It has nothing to do with the Jewish faith or Jewish people at all. But yet I'm hearing rhetoric from people at Turning Point on their podcast that if I criticize Israel, I'm not a good Christian. And I'm totally disgusted by this attitude that I'm seeing now that we're supposed to kowtow to some other nation's political whims. And religion's not even part of my criticism, and it wouldn't be if I felt that way. So that's where I'm coming from. And I want to finish by saying this, and I'll let you respond. I believe Charlie had a similar, and you're closer to him than I was, certainly, but I believe he had a similar epiphany because he went on the PBD podcast, and very clearly, and I went and watched it yesterday in preparation for our interview again to refresh my memory, and he was very clear. He actually raised the question, didn't come to a definitive conclusion. Was October 7th allowed to happen by Netanyahu because he slow responsed the help 6 hours versus what should have been 3 minutes? And then Charlie went on to say, and this is the beginning of the conflict, he said, "I believe Netanyahu is going to commit genocide in Gaza." That's a quote. So Charlie was turning away from Netanyahu's foreign wars of imperialism. And he ran into difficulty with his own people in Turning Point. And I've been told that by insiders. Do you want to respond to some of that?
Well, I think that Charlie was a independent critical thinker, and I think that, he wasn't the only person that raised those questions. And they're certainly legitimate questions to raise, right? I mean, there's nothing wrong with raising those questions. And then it's like anything else. You need to be able to actually somewhere, somehow, at some point, somebody needs to be able to produce conclusive evidence. History tells us, by the way, that's extraordinarily difficult to do,
It
right?
is. I agree.
And with regard to the Israeli peace in general, it is a shame that the nation itself is almost a religious state by definition, meaning that when anything happens involving it, it draws into play these religious sort of considerations. Said simply, if what happened in Israel in October 7th a few years ago had happened in the south of France, we would not be having the same kinds of conversations about responses post-event. This is, by the way, as much a Christian problem as a Jewish one. We wouldn't have the state of Israel if it weren't for the dual interests of what we call Jewish Zionists, just a religious term for a nationalist, and of course, evangelical Christians wanting to see the Jewish state restored so that all could be fulfilled for the second coming. So we have a religious state. It is wrapped in its history and formation with a very, not just religion and not just Christianity or Judaism, but with particular strains of belief within Christianity and Judaism. So any criticism or praise of it on either side will always be met with fervent disagreement and fervent support. My thought only is this. My thought is, what if Marco Rubio was doing something a couple of weeks ago that would be very rare for a public official? What if he was telling the truth? And what if we actually attacked Iran because we heard Israel was about to, and we were afraid if we didn't do it first, that we would face some sort of retaliation? If that statement was actually true, and of course the president says it wasn't, but if it was, if that was actually the case, then it ought to concern a great many Americans. And it has nothing to do with Judaism or Christianity.
I agree.
It has to do with another country driving our foreign policy. It is a
Exactly.
cold question, not a passionate one.
Yeah, and let me just give you an example. Okay, I have always been a supporter of Israel. We need their military alliance in the Middle East. Just strategically, we have needed them, and they've been a pretty good ally of ours. Okay, but Netanyahu to me is a horse of a different color, and I'm going to give you one example that it just makes me sick to my stomach. It's well documented that schools were bombed during school hours. Now, I understand Hamas puts headquarters under schools because they think you don't dare do this because of the PR fallout. Okay, then bomb the school at night. See, these are things that really bothered me, that they made victims out of innocents. And I'm not a Palestinian supporter, too influenced by Hamas. But the children, really, bombing hospitals, this is what turned me off to Netanyahu. And he's also been indicted in a world court for similar crimes. And so to me, that's a legitimate political conversation, has nothing to do with religion. I don't care if the man was a Hindu or a Catholic. You do those kinds of things, you deserve to be criticized. And yet right now, people at a turning point on their podcast are making it sound like, well, if you insult the politics, you're going after Jews and you're anti-Semitic, and I reject that.
Well, it's sort of preposterous in so many ways, right? And one of the sad facts about any sort of militant position, and especially those born in religion, is that they're bathed in ignorance, right? So the typical Christian mouthpiece that is just belligerently and defiantly supporting Israel no matter what, typically also lacks a great understanding of both scripture and history. Unfortunately, we can't dismiss their opinions because they influence others. And we're right back to where we started the show on some level. And that is, for anyone listening, for any human being on the planet, do better in your own life. In terms of when you listen to people that have a microphone, spend some time going beyond what that person that has some large following on social media and a big microphone. Go beyond that and please take the time to study and understand not just current events, but understand past history because we're built on the back of a mountain of experience. In this case, over 2,000 plus years. And so there's much to understand about this that people simply miss. And these belligerent absolutist positions, quite typically, are absent all forms of critical thought, no discernment.
One thing you said, and I agree with you, and by background, I'll tell you, and I judged Erica Kirk's body language, which I don't think we need to get into because I'm a former therapist. But I also taught research at the university level and I wrote courses in it. And I do agree with you that getting definitive proof is very difficult with regard to the murder of Charlie, with regard to assuming motivations for certain people like the Nation of Israel. Did they benefit from his death? Were they a part of it? I agree. But also, too, there's the qualitative analysis with we call it preponderance of the evidence. And I look at things at a turning point and I feel like they should be asking the same questions I have just about the forensics. Because I'm inflamed by Charlie's death. I want justice, And I think they're looking in the wrong direction with this kid. I don't know if you know this or not, but Ryan Mata produced IP. Now they've been scrubbed, but he has the screenshots. IP searches out of Tel Aviv, and again, this is preponderance of the evidence, not direct proof. But he found that people in Israel were researching Tyler James Robinson the night before the assassination. And I'm satisfied it's a valid document that he's produced. That's that. See, do you see why people ask questions and they come to these conclusions?
I see why they ask questions, and I see why they come conclusions, I suppose. But I would suggest to you that look, there's three kinds of opinions to have. One is a belief. A belief is something you just get to have. There's no need to justify it. There's no need to support it. You just have it. I just believe. The next type is a conclusion. A conclusion is something that you've come to after some sort of a process. Could be lengthy, could be heuristic, could be scholarly, could be a night of reading the internet, but you've gone through a process to come to a conclusion. The third kind of opinion to have is a hypothesis. And that's exactly the same thing as a conclusion, except now you're willing to test it. So, and I would, by the way, for the people that post different kinds of research and stuff they put together and put on the internet, sorry, this is just me. I take it all with a grain of salt. I do. I think that the notion of the citizen expert, citizen journalist is one of the most tragic and dangerous things the internet has given to us. There's a whole lot of people out there posting a whole lot of things that make a whole lot of sense that are just a bunch of garbage. And it doesn't mean all of it is, but I'm going to play the odds in general. And say that if I've got some fella doing something that he's figured out and here's all the stuff he posted, I'm going to assume that it's likely garbage. Could be my mistake, by the way. It's a hypothesis and I'm willing to test it if proven otherwise. But I just think, you know, I go back to the Charlie assassination. And to me, this is really simple because there is no conspiracy you can come up with, none, zero. That after the shooting took place, that if we don't know about a bigger picture right now, that the Trump administration was involved in it. And I'm not buying it. There's no possible way the Trump administration couldn't be involved in having either, again, ordering, blessing, or covering up. Simple.
Okay, but
And
still, that regardless, leave Trump out of it for a second. Some of the basic forensics, okay, the 30-06 and the covering up of the crime scene within 48 hours to prevent any ballistic recovery that could have been matched or not matched to any perceived gun that was used. That's inexcusable. And for the FBI to do that, we're dealing with extreme negligence and incompetence, or there was omission. I don't think there's any other choice there. It's one or the other.
Well, then, if you said it's incompetence or omission, deliberate, then incompetence, always willing to consider that. If it was deliberate, by the way, now we're right back to what I said. And that means the Trump administration's involved in it. And I'm not buying it. Somebody would actually have to prove
Well,
that with real evidence.
I'm going to give you a hypothesis, and admit it's a hypothesis. I had to ask myself that question. Why would Trump let the FBI do such a shoddy job? And I'm thinking, okay, he certainly loved Charlie. I don't have any doubt about that at all. But if Israel wanted Charlie out of the way in this hypothesis, and Trump is married to Israel and we're going to war together, it might be better if Trump just says, let's let him get away with it. And that's something that I hear over and over and over from people. And I admit it's a hypothesis, but I don't sit here and say Trump sat there and wanted it to happen and he's happy it happened. But sometimes leaders make sacrifices for, quote, a greater good. And maybe that's not the right answer, but I'm telling you, that doesn't remove the fact that this was the worst investigation I have ever seen in a major assassination. And I've studied a lot of them.
I don't have any way to comment on that and measure against it. Not my area of expertise, historical assassination investigations. We haven't had one of these of a figure of this stature since Bobby Kennedy. We've had assassination attempts. We've had other people assassinated, but not a figure of this stature. Look, I guess at the end of the day, I will offer you a couple of thoughts, sort of to close on the topic. One is that if anybody, yourself or anybody listening to your show, has ever looked for an important piece of email they were sent and they didn't receive it, and then they looked in their spam folder and found it there, you understand the problem of inductive logic. That's number one. So drawing inference from things can lead to you missing a very important message, because that's all the logic is, the Bayesian logic of a spam filter. The other thing is this. I once had, many years ago, back in the early days when car phones were mounted in a car and you had to go and get them installed for several hours, I was sitting at my desk early in the morning and I got a call on my landline from a friend driving home, who was calling me because he had inadvertently spent the evening. He had gone to a gentleman's dancing club the night before and wound up spending the evening with one of the employees. And he was on his way home at 8 o'clock in the morning to see his wife, who'd be getting ready for work. So he called to ask me what to do and how he should feel. And I said to him, look, I said, did you plan to do what you did last night? And he said, no. And I said, do you think that if everything was perfect in your home life, you would have wound up doing what you did last night? And he said, no. And I said, well, then what you ought to do is walk in the door and look at your wife and say, honey, I forgive you for making me stay out all night with the lady I stayed out with. What is that? That's pure sophistry. You can construct an argument that makes sense out of anything. And if I can come up with a way for my friend to walk in the door and forgive his wife for a night of his indiscretion, we can certainly come up with all sorts of ways to figure out that something that appears to have happened is otherwise. And it may be, but we spending time speculating about it on the internet
Yeah, well, Brett,
is not worthwhile.
I do want to ask you a question before we close. Okay, you may not be able to answer this. I didn't bring up the money issues because that wasn't your relationship with TPUSA. I think that'd be a waste of time to have that discussion with my money concerns. But I wanted to ask you something. Andrew Colvett went on Jesse Waters and talked about we geofenced 277,000 people in and around State Farm Stadium at the memorial, and then I found a FARA document, Foreign Agent Registration, and it has kind of a Christian sounding name, but it's run by people out of Israel, and they're fulfilling their obligation in the law to register as foreign agents. But when you scroll down about 25 pages, they have a map with dots of major U.S. churches in the Western United States, and they're geofencing. In other words, people going into the church, their cell phones are geofenced, and TPUSA is mentioned as a prominent partner in this. What possible reason could TPUSA, or really even any church, why do they need to geofence people going to church?
Oh, look, I'm not, first of all, I'm not going to condone it for a moment, but I'll give you, let's do ourselves a favor as we're sitting here mid-morning, and let's shave with Occam's razor and find the simplest explanation. Again, by the way, can't prove it. It's just a hypothesis. They're doing it for marketing reasons. They have the ability to capture that data and then be able to go out and directly market. And so you're saying, well, wow, that seems pretty awful that you would use a memorial event to get data on people to market to them. Can't disagree. I wouldn't have done it, right? Maybe you wouldn't have done it. You and I wouldn't have done it. But if Andrew Colvett and the team ordered it, then again, they'll have to answer to themselves and the God of their understanding.
But on that FARA document, this is what concerns me though. The FARA document, the mission of the agency that TPUSA was partnering with on geofencing in these churches, they said in their FARA disclosure, we're promoting the best interests of Israel, want to basically make people like our country and so forth. I don't have any problem with that at all. But why would TPUSA participate in their activity to geofence American citizens on behalf of a foreign interest going into churches? See, to me, this raises questions that I think need to be looked into.
Well, I mean, I'm not suggesting that looking into something is wrong, But the wedding of a group that is largely now evangelical in nature, alongside Israeli interests, goes back to what I talked about before. This is about the origin of Israel in the first place. And you know, Israel wouldn't exist absent that fundamental Christian support for it. By the way, not all those Christians were somehow or other pro-Jewish or loving Jewish people. Some of them are very convinced that the Jews are all going to be condemned when Jesus comes back. It's just that they need the Jews in Israel for Jesus to come back. So when you start to get into this sort of, I don't know, disfigured belief in things, any sort of alliance is possible. Is it nefarious? I guess it depends on what your definition of
Well, that's
nefarious
why
and
I said it needs to be looked into, because I can't understand why TPUSA, that's supposed to be an America First organization, would participate in this.
And
It
I
seems
would
like they.
suggest that one very good possible reason goes back to what I talked about at the beginning of the show, which is what appears to be a shift in focus with the group from one that is about first mar free markets and first principles to one that's got more of a fundamentalist sort of Christian sense to it. I think it's going to look, over time, it seems as though it's going to look a lot more like a Billy Graham rally than it is, you know, say a Milton Friedman seminar. Being around for the early days of Turning Point and being a speaker at their conferences, you know, it's funny, we used to do something really weird at Turning Point events. We used to try to educate the students. There's no education going on anymore. It's evangelism, it's ginning the kids up, it's getting them fired up. You know, their big events like AmFest are really more driven for adult paying audiences than they are for the
I've said
youth.
that exactly.
There's no education going on anymore at all. When Turning Point started, you could go to one of the events where they were present, and they would have booklets on the table, informational booklets that were written about a whole variety of topics: healthcare, education funding, history of capitalism, social justice argument for free markets. I know about these booklets, by the way, because I wrote them. They don't do that anymore. There are no more booklets. They don't have any literature. They just have clever t-shirts and bumper stickers with sort of aggressive slogans. You're going to see more of that, and you're going to see the nature of those slogans shift from free markets and first principles to a more, shall we say, sort of zealous religious message, I suspect. And people can do with that what they want. It's not my cup of tea. It's not something that interests me. They certainly have a right to do it. They have a right to say what they want. If somebody's upset about what a Turning Point person says on a podcast, listen to a different podcast. Our obsession over wanting to stop someone's speech or, you know, be overly just turn it off. And then be mindful
I
and wary
agree.
of the people that don't.
Brent, I want to say this before we close. First of all, even though we disagree, I think, on some of the fundamental facts, I appreciate your professionalism. And that came through loud and clear.
Thank you.
Secondly, I owe you and America and our youth owe you a debt of gratitude for the contribution you made to Charlie. So any disagreements we have here, that doesn't take away from the respect I have for the work that you have done. And your last conclusion about where Turning Point is headed is my major concern. We need to reach the youth in the way that Charlie was, and Glitz is not going to get it done. And I hear it from my own 25-year-old son. And I really appreciate you being honest and forthright about that. And honestly, Brent, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh, I love being here and I love the disagreements. They're fun. Disagreements, actually, it's almost like we need a different word, right? Because you and I are looking at a set of circumstances and events, tragic events, and then big picture sort of things in motion. And we're looking at them and we're seeing them from a different perspective, right? Maybe with different emphasis on which elements are important or not, right? So it's not even that we're disagreeing. We're looking at it differently. We're coming to some different hypotheses, not conclusions, because we're willing to test them.
I agree.
And
I
when,
agree. And that's healthy. That's healthy.
That's
And
true. When we
that's
air
what
them out
Charlie did.
together, and when we air them out together, the people that listen, that, my hope is that, for anyone that listened to this show today, they're just saying, wow, that was really kind of interesting. Those guys both were saying some different stuff. And then they say, I want to learn more about all of this, right? I want to think more about it. And if they do that, you and I win, right?
No, your influence on Charlie is pretty obvious, and that's let me ask you this. What, now that Charlie's gone, and I'm assuming you're not working with Turning Point now, what are you going to do professionally?
Oh, I Charlie and I worked together, right? By the way, right up until February of last year, and we only stopped working together because there was just nothing left for me to do. But we did a lot of things together, and I was I we mentioned I wrote for him. I was his political science, his private political science teacher. We went from the ancient Greeks all the way up through the 20th century pragmatists before we stopped. And then also early days working with him on his radio show scripts, when his monologues, when he started the radio show in 2020, and also doing his media coaching from 2014 through 2016, and did some stuff with him behind the scenes on the Trump campaign in 2016. So quite a broad, history. Out of all that, none of that to me matters as much as that I'm the person who was his original weight training coach. So in the weight room, that's what I love the most.
Well, that's where
But
you and I have common ground.
yeah, so
Speaking of common ground, I got to get this in before we cut to
yep.
close. But you have something called Common Ground Campus. You want to tell the audience about that?
You bet. So Common Ground Campus is actually a program that's approved by Turning Point USA as an outside program. And it's something that my colleague and dear friend Felisa Blazek designed 5 years ago, and we built it ourselves. And today it's grown to have the support of the Bradley Foundation and the Diana Davis Spencer Foundation and other private donors. And what we do is, through a variety of offerings, we work with young people at the high school and college level to teach them how to think critically, engage constructively, and solve problems instead of arguing about differences. So this is a group or a program where everything we're doing is about trying to get young people to just stop for a minute. Stop with two things. Stop with hating people in the third person, and just indirectly labeling groups, and make your conversations personal, even on a social media platform. Make them personal. Understand that real human beings are the recipients of what you're saying and doing. So be very careful on the outgoing message, right? And on the other hand, be receptive to the incoming message. Embrace your inner Socrates. Ask people questions. And more important than asking the question is caring about the answer you're given. Care about the answer. Understand where someone's coming from. With a religious sort of slant to your show and audience, I'll invoke the great Spanish missionary Las Casas, who said, "No conversion is worth having unless it's voluntary."
I
So
agree.
if you want somebody to come around to your way of thinking, if you want them to see the world the way you might see it, you first need to understand how they see it themselves. And then you need to be able to get them to open up and be willing to listen to you. And then perhaps you'll have an opportunity to get them to come to see things the way you see them. And if you do, the conversion will be voluntary. And those are the kinds that stick. So we're trying to teach those skills to young people. It's a great mission. It's a lot of fun.
How do
So
people
Common
find
Ground
you?
Campus,
Well, Brent,
commongroundcampus.com. They can go take a look at the
I'm
website.
yeah, we want to put that in the show description for you.
That's very kind.
CommonGroundCampus.com. As you were just talking, if I closed my eyes, I thought I'd be hearing Charlie. I see the
Yeah.
in
Well,
I
Charlie
see the
loved this
insight.
program. In fact, we have a C3 that we formed in support of the program called Bridge Charities. And I flipped the tables on Charlie a couple of years ago. I texted him and I said, "Hey, I'm going to turn things around on you. I need your advice." So and he actually called me right away, and I said, "Look, we got the program." He knew all about the program, and I said, "We're trying to figure out what we've got here, and we're trying to make a decision. Do we have something with enterprise value or public service value?" And I said, "You start at Turning Point. You've been living in this for a long time. What are your thoughts?" And he said, "If I were you, I would start a C3, and I would do everything I could to promote the idea, raise money for it." He said, "It's a great concept." And so when he shared that advice, and I talked to my colleague about it, that was what pushed she and I over the edge. It was kind of like, well, if Charlie Kirk thinks this is a good idea, maybe it's a good idea, right? So
Well,
we owe that to Charlie.
you should, I think, take pride in the fact that I look at like JFK, a brilliant mind cut short, and Charlie, a brilliant mind, didn't get to fulfill his total potential. But you had a big impact on this, and I want to thank you for the impact that you influenced Charlie on, because Charlie did, at least for a short while, change the course of American history, at least politically. And
He did.
I think you should take a lot of solace and pride in that. And I'm sure his loss is missed by as much by you as anybody else. And my hope for Turning Point is they rediscover the roots of Charlie. That's what I hope they do.
I think that here's the thing. We've had religious conflicts now for a couple thousand years, and they've never been resolved. We've only had free market sort of collectivist arguments for 250 years or so. So early days by comparison, and focusing on these notions of Adam Smith and John Locke and others, and trying to have those things reinforced and embraced, seems to be a fight more likely to have a chance to be won, or at least won in parts, right? Victories over collectivism can never really be over. They can only be celebrated in the moment. But I would like to see that return to the roots, because I think the battle is an easier one to fight, and in general, a more important one to fight and win in a country that, contrary to popular belief, while built on principles of tolerance and built by men of varying religious backgrounds, primarily the influential ones being deists. This is a nation, first and foremost, built on the ideas of John Locke and the right to life, liberty, and property. And I'd like to see us get back to those and see what we could do, but we'll see. I'm not running the place, and that's from the For What It's Worth department.
So are you totally involved with Common Ground Campus now and kind of gone off on
Oh,
your
I
own?
no, actually, it's my partner who does all the hard work. I just show up at events. She's the workhorse in it. But no, I'm also part of John Solomon's group at Just the News. We sold our media platform to Just the News, Human Events and Postmillennial. That was my prior home. And in addition to that, I've also had my own business consulting practice, and still do, for 26 years now. And finally, I'm the chief communications officer for the Freedom Chamber, based here in Illinois, but with a national footprint. And it is an organization representing the interests of the independently owned business, with some really wonderful programs, in particular, a healthcare solution that is really effective, customer service driven, and about 40% cheaper than standard plans. So I do a lot of different things to keep busy. Also, still writing books. Got a couple in the works right now, so that's fun. Some people would say, "Wow, you've got this really great diverse background," and other people would say, "Geez, you can't hold a job, can you?" But
I hear the same. I hear the same thing.
whatever their perspective or inference they might draw about me, they're free to. Mostly, I just have fun every day.
Good. Well, I want to thank you for coming on. Very insightful, and I think you role modeled very well any points of disagreement we had on how to handle it professionally, and that's in the spirit of Charlie, and I can see the influence. Thanks so much, Brent.
Thank you for having me. Really enjoyed it. It was fun.
Me too.